So yesterday, we concluded the Praman section, that part of Tattva Sandarbha, which is establishing what is the best source of knowledge. How will we get knowledge, particularly about the absolute truth? So the second part is the Prameya section. Prameya section means that section in which the truth is described on the basis of that particular source, or with reference to and taking help from that, based on that source, which of course is Srimad Bhagavatam. That Praman section culminated very strongly yesterday with that very nice section dealing with Shukadev Goswami. How, when Shukadev Goswami came into that assembly of all the great saintly persons in the universe, including the very great Vyasadev, incarnation of Lord Narayan, and Narada Muni, also very, very great spiritual authority. But when Shukadev Goswami came into that assembly, then spontaneously, without him even having shown his credentials, so to speak, or demonstrated his qualification, but just by seeing him, they were so struck, and because they're great transcendentalists, they were immediately able to see, just by looking at him, that here is the most qualified person to help Maharaj Parikshit at this crucial time, as death is coming to him. So they all stood up, including his own guru, out of respect. When a respectable person comes into an assembly, then there are two or possibly three ways of reacting for the more junior persons. One is that you can stand up. Another is you can bow down, offer obeisances. And a third possibility is you can do both. And of course, Prabhupada says also, that this is in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada says that it's nice to offer some words of praise also, glorification. So when Shukadev walked into that assembly, everyone stood up. Even Vyas, his own guru, and even Narada Muni, the guru of his guru, spontaneously, they all stood up to offer recognition and offer respect to this greatest transcendental person who had just entered the assembly. And then again, without needing to hear from him, even without needing anything in the way of him displaying his qualification, but immediately they all said to him that, yes, you sit on the Vyasasan and you take the role of preceptor here in this assembly, means the ultimate authority, the authority who defines the standards and defines what is going on there, and decides what are the correct understandings, like this. And then they all sat down to listen to him. So in this way, that Praman section finished. And now we're going into the Prameya section, where the truth, which is described in that best source of knowledge, Srimad Bhagavatam, that truth is going to be described. However, that begins in text 29, actually. Now, in the meantime, there's 27 and 28, which are sort of in-between verses. And there, Srila Jiva Goswami, he explains how he is going to present things. So here we have then on page 44, section 4, titled Methodology and Sources of Reference for Tattva Sandarbha. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is the Praman. But still, he is also going to be making some other references under certain circumstances, and this he's going to explain here, and how he's going to make his presentation based on Srimad Bhagavatam. He's also going to explain here in 27 and 28 before he starts actually making his presentation about that truth. And as we said, that'll be in text 29. So let us read then, first of all, text 27. 27, part 1. Therefore, to ascertain what is actually the highest good in life, we should focus our investigation on Srimad Bhagavatam, carefully reconciling its statements with what precedes and follows them. With this aim, in this work consisting of 6 sandarbhas, the introductory sentences in each anuchet, or text we call them, will serve the function of sutras. The quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam will be the scriptural texts under consideration. Sridhar Swami's explanation of the Bhagavatam will serve as our primary commentary. Srila Sridhar Swami is a perfect Vaishnava, but to entice the Advaitavadis, nowadays prominent all over Madhya Desh and other parts of the country, to become absorbed in the glories of the Supreme Lord, he mixed some traces of their theories into his writings. We will cite Sri Swami Charan's commentary verbatim when it agrees with the conclusions of pure Vaishnav philosophy. And 27, part 2. Our explanation of certain Bhagavatam verses will be based on comments given by Sridhar Swami on other verses. Sometimes our explanation will be based on statements by the exalted devotees of the Lord, known as Sri Vaishnavs. They are famous throughout the Dravida Desh, South India, and in other regions, and their sampradaya was founded by the goddess Sri herself. Srimad Bhagavatam attests to the greatness of these devotees, affirming their numerical strength in South India and their reputation as Vaishnavs. So quotes then from Srimad Bhagavatam, in Kali Yuga, there are indeed Vaishnavs scattered here and there, but they're especially abundant in the Dravida regions, 11.5.39. The statements of the Sri Vaishnavs we cite are certified by the authority of Sri Ramanuja Bhagavatpad's opinions, found in his Sri Bhasya and other works written by him. Sometimes we'll simply follow the self-evident meaning of the original Bhagavatam texts, and sometimes we will base our explanations on other authorities. Since the explanations of the Advaitavadis are already so well known, we will not bother to elaborate on them much. In other words, we are not interested in the Mayavadis. Yes, okay, so that is text 27. And there are some interesting points there. So, 27.1, certainly the focus obviously has to be on Srimad Bhagavatam. And he explains how he's going to present the message of, or the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, which he's going to quote. Many, many verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. So he says he will reconcile the statements. He'll take the verses and points they make, not, you know, like independent, not independent of the context in which they appear. It'll be a very contextually based presentation. He is not just going to take a verse and say, look, Srimad Bhagavatam says this. But he is going to present the statements in terms of, first of all, the systematic intent of the whole book. What the whole book is about. Then, the verses, when he quotes verses, he'll also take into consideration the immediate context, the verses immediately surrounding that verse, and even on a more extended basis, some number of verses, different passages, which the particular verse or verses that he's referring to, which they appear in. So like this, it's going to be a very honest presentation and a very thorough presentation, taking into consideration these important factors, not just arbitrarily taking one quote from here, one quote from there, but taking into consideration the contexts, both in the complete sense of the whole Bhagavatam and the more local sense of where the particular verses are appearing. So then he goes on to say how he will present his arguments. He's going to use a system. So this is also there in 27.1. He says, of course, he's talking about all the six sandarbhas. It's not just tattva sandarbha. In fact, in many cases, it's more in the other sandarbhas, although it's also there in tattva sandarbha. But this is his general system for making his points. First of all, this is something like Vedanta Sutra, actually. It's not unrelated. It's not exactly the same. But it's not unrelated. It's a three-step process. The first step, he says, is that with this aim, in this work consisting of six sandarbhas, the introductory sentences in each anuchet, in each text, will serve the function of sutras. So what this means is that he will begin each text with something like a general statement. A statement that something is like something. For example, in Vedanta Sutra, the very first anuchet, or what do they call it there? Anukaran, something like that. The very first anukaran, very first text, begins with a famous statement. Do you know what that is, that statement? Atato brahma jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire into the absolute truth. Yeah. So that is not really an argument. It's just a statement. Here we are. This is this. So this is what he's saying here. The introductory sentence will serve the function of a sutra. It'll be a certain statement, unargued, but just presented here. I think this. Then the second step will be quotations directly from Srimad Bhagavatam, generally. Of course, he may also, as he said, he hasn't said yet, I said, that, or when we read through the verse, this verse 27, he says he's also sometimes going to refer to some other scriptures. But mainly, he is then going to present some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam particularly, which are presenting this idea that he has already mentioned as that introductory statement. Yeah. Then there's a third step that is a commentary. Then he'll make a commentary. In other words, he'll argue the point and come to a conclusion and establish that point, which he first of all just presented as a statement, like a Tadu Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire. Now in the human form of life is the time to inquire into the absolute truth. So then he'd present some verses which basically say that, and then present some arguments. So at the end you agree, yes, right. He has proved to me that now I've come to the human form of life, now is the right time to inquire into the absolute truth. And he says that this his commentary will be based first and foremost on Sridhar Swami's commentary, Bhavarta Dipika, this famous commentary. That is going to be his main source, primary commentary. So then, also in 27.1, he gives a little description, a little explanation about Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami, he says, first of all, is a perfect Vaishnav. Now, it is a fact, though, that when he was living, which was in the 1200s or thereabouts, then Mayavad was so extremely strongly established that it was very widely accepted. And Sridhar Swami's interest, his particular mission was to convert the Mayavadis. That was his business. So when he wrote his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he wrote it with that idea in mind, on that basis. Because, after all, as we mentioned, Shankaracharya wrote that Govindashtakam, which is very nice glorification of Lord Govinda, Lord Krishna, and is mentioning pastimes which only appear in Srimad Bhagavatam, only in Srimad Bhagavatam. As a result, Shankaracharya, of course, at that time was extremely popular, very overwhelmingly popular, actually. Very, very, very popular indeed. So, having read that Govindashtakam, a certain number of his followers then became interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. As Mayavadis, not really as devotees, but some interest was there. So Sridhar Swami, his strategy was to try to capitalize on that. So he wrote his Bhavarta Dipika, his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, in such a way that a Mayavadi audience could take the book. And first of all, of course, it was extremely important that he didn't come on too heavily from the Vaishnav perspective. Because if he just came on just as a straight Vaishnav, then these people who are Mayavadis, actually, they would immediately see this and think, no, 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 this, we're not interested in this, and put it aside. So therefore, he had to couch his presentation in a lot of Mayavad terminology, a certain amount of Mayavad philosophy even, but injected in there was Vaishnavism. This was his strategy. Now, he's a pure devotee, as Jiva Goswami says here, perfect Vaishnav. So when he makes his Vaishnav points, they are just absolutely perfect Vaishnav points. But the problem is, for a Vaishnav at least, the problem for a Vaishnav is you don't want to get caught up in the various Mayavadi points that he also makes as part of his strategy, not because he believes it, but it's part of his strategy. So therefore, Jiva Goswami says, we will cite Sri Swami Charan's commentary verbatim when it agrees with the conclusions of pure Vaishnava philosophy. And when it doesn't, then we won't. Now, of course, in saying that, he is not making some judgment against Sridhar Swami at all. Because, well, he's just said Sridhar Swami's explanation of the Bhagavatam is our primary source of information for making our points, establishing our points about Krishna consciousness. And we know Lord Chaitanya, he revered Sridhar Swami. He worshipped Sridhar Swami, and he would not tolerate anyone speaking against Sridhar Swami. You know, there's that famous incident where Vallabhacharya, right? Vallabha Bhatta. He was trying to impress Lord Chaitanya in a very mundane, in very mundane ways. So one thing he tried to do is he came along and said, you know, I've written a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, and it is better than Sridhar Swami's. I have defeated Sridhar Swami in so many respects, because I forget the exact point that he tried to make, but he made some comment, Sridhar Swami's commentary is too much like this. There's something wrong with it. So now I have corrected everything with my commentary. Can I show you? And Lord Chaitanya's reply was that, what is it? He who criticizes or disobeys the Swami is a prostitute. Yeah. In the sense that a husband can be called Swami by the wife. And if the wife deviates off and becomes involved in other situations, other men, this is prostitution. So, in this way, Lord Chaitanya devastated Vallabha Bhatta. Completely devastated him. Lord Chaitanya was totally supportive of Sridhar Swami. But of course there is this understanding, and Jiva Goswami refers to it here. Okay, then 27 part 2, he says that when we're explaining certain of the Bhagavatam verses, which we're going to be giving as scriptural statements which endorse our initial statement, then sometimes we will explain those verses based on comments that Sridhar Swami has made, but when he's explained other verses, not the particular verse that we're referring to, but where the point is relevant in some other purport of Sridhar Swami for the verse we're commenting on, then we'll take Sridhar Swami's commentary. In other words, he's really going to base it very strongly on Sridhar Swami. But sometimes, he says, sometimes our explanations will be based on the commentaries of the Sri Vaishnavas. However, he qualifies that by saying that the statements down the bottom of the first paragraph there on page 45, the statements of the Sri Vaishnavas, which we are going to quote, will only be those statements which Ramanuja Acharya himself has either made himself personally or has given support to. In other words, there are parts of Sri Vaishnav philosophy which we don't agree with. Yeah. So we're not endorsing the entire scope of Sri Vaishnav philosophy. And of course there are many, you know, the whole history of Sri Vaishnavism is quite long. There are two branches of the Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya right now which disagree with each other. But he'll be accepting certain points either made by Ramanuja himself, or which Ramanuja, if they're made by some other Sri Vaishnav, but they're points which Ramanuja agrees with. And then, at the end of 27 part 2, sometimes we will just explain, where the meaning of the Srimad Bhagavatam verses is just clear, then we'll just explain in following that obvious understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam verse. So, like this. Okay, so 28. Let us read 28 quickly. 28.1. In this book, I'll be citing various statements from Shruti, Puranas, and other scriptures, quoting the exact words which I've seen written. I will do this to provide evidence for my own ideas, rather than to verify what Srimad Bhagavatam says. Sometimes I've not myself seen the original scriptures from which I cite passages. In these cases, these citations I borrow from various works of Sri Madhvacharya Charan, including Sri Bhagavat Tatparya, his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharat Tatparya, his commentary on Mahabharat, and Brahma Sutra Bhasya, his commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Sri Madhva is the spiritual master of the Tattvavad school. He is an old standard authority. Although he originally belonged to the disciplic line directly descending from Srimad Shankaracharya, he separated himself from Shankara's school and joined the party of the Vaishnavas. His special Vaishnav doctrine has been preached widely. Among his disciples and later followers, renowned in South India and elsewhere, are Sri Vijay Dwaja Tirtha, Brahmanya Tirtha, and Vyasa Tirtha, all of whom are very eminent scholars of the Vedas and their purports. In 28.2. Thus, in his Mahabharat Tatparya, his commentary on Mahabharat, Madhva says, "It is by the mercy of the Vedanta Sutra that I've correctly understood other scriptures, having engaged myself in studying many different kinds of books located in various places. Here I will speak my opinions according to the views of Bhagavan Vyas, the Supreme Lord Narayan, in person, as he has expressed them in his Mahabharat and other works." It is useful to know that Madhvacharya has cited Shruti texts such as the Chatur Vedashika, portions of the Garuda, and other Puranas, which are now not available everywhere, Samhitas like the Maha Samhita, and Tantras like the Tantra Bhagavat and Brahma Tarka. In other words, these books are not available. So the point here is, it's a very interesting point. You know, we've mentioned, it's come up how the Vedic tradition, or the books which make up the Vedic tradition, certain parts have been lost, even considerable parts in the case of the four Vedas. But this, of course, happened over a period of time. It didn't just happen like that. So, just like we read, Jiva Goswami says just a few verses ago that nowadays there are certain Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries readily available to him 450 years ago. But now in 1999, most of them are not available. They're non-existent. So there's been this process of deterioration. Now, going back to the time of Madhvacharya, there were more books available, more of those original old texts and old commentaries on the original texts by different big acharyas and very great authorities. More of them were available then. Anyway, now, first of all, though, Jiva Goswami says in 28.1 that he's going to be quoting many different books, not books, but scriptures, Vedic scriptures, which he has seen. In some cases, some of those books that he saw himself, they're not available today. And for him, 450 years ago, there were also books which were not available to him, but he has seen quotations from them, particularly, he says, in the works of Madhvacharya. Why Madhvacharya? Why not, you know, so many people who may have given quotations from here and there, from previously? The thing about Madhvacharya is that he made an exhaustive research, traveling all over India a number of times, locating old scriptures and getting copies made of them. And in some cases, just reading them and memorizing them and writing them out himself later. So he, in this way, he amassed in Udupi, down in South India, he amassed the biggest library at that time of Vedic literature. Unfortunately, in the meantime, between then and the time of Jiva Goswami, what to speak about now, that library was destroyed. There was a fire. The whole library, or most of the library, was burnt to ashes. So, Madhvacharya wrote about 33 books, which are available now. In those 33 books, he quotes from approximately 200 sources, authoritative sources, which are not available today in 1999. However, of course, we do not doubt Madhvacharya, and neither did Jiva Goswami doubt Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya said that in the Garuda Purana, it says this. So in the Garuda Purana is one of the Puranas which is not fully existing now. So when we go to a copy of Garuda Purana today, we may not find that verse because that part was lost. But in the time of Madhvacharya, it was existing. So this is the idea. This is the idea here, that he will be referring to two sources in terms of writings of other people, mainly Vedic writings, but then some other commentaries, like he mentions here in 28.2, the Chatur Veda Shika. That is a commentary on the four Vedas. It doesn't say who it's by here. I don't know who it's by. It is a commentary on the four Vedas, which was not existing at the time Jiva Goswami wrote, but Madhvacharya quotes from it. And then various, even Tantra Bhagavat, it appears, was not available at the time of Jiva Goswami, it seems. So you follow the idea here. These are his sources of reference. Jiva Goswami, of course, he was very honest. You know, in a sense, that goes without saying for a great acharya. But even before he became a great acharya, Jiva Goswami had a great reputation for being honest, even as a child. As a child, it is said, he would not even dream of anything if it wasn't true. What to speak of speak something if it wasn't true. So he is completely convinced that all these different sources he's going to quote from, that they are genuine, bona fide, authorized, and correct in all respects. You know, of course, at that time, we can also understand he must have had many other possible sources available, which he chose to put aside, though, because they may not have been 100% authorized, even though they were there. So he is sticking to sources which he is completely convinced are valid, even if those sources are not existing exactly at that time. Yeah. So this is his methodology then, and these are his sources. So, any comments or questions? Okay, so we'll go on. Yes? Right. No. I think he thinks, it would appear at least that he feels it's not required. Otherwise he might go into... You know, because they're big acharyas. Yeah, particularly the audience that he's aiming at. That's another interesting point. Sridhar Swami was aiming at a particular audience, but we know Jiva Goswami is aiming at quite a different audience. Those who have made Lord Krishna the only goal of their lives, that's a very different audience. Yeah. So he's established Srimad Bhagavatam now. It's not exactly that he's going to just get into a whole polemical thing and just argue back and forth and around and about. Not really. He's basically going to follow just a certain line of establishing Krishna consciousness as we know it. He does answer different, you know, objections. Particularly here in Tattva Sandarbha, actually answers some objections. But as he gets into it more, then, you know, it's not so much like that. It's more just clarifying and explaining in order to establish the points. Yeah, like that. So his audience is such. Now he's established Srimad Bhagavatam. His audience is such that, you know, they accept Madhva and Sridhar Swami. Well, Sridhar Swami in those days was universally accepted. He's still accepted amongst the Mayavadis, Sridhar Swami, as a very important commentator after Shankaracharya. Well, Sridhar Swami explained Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, that's a fact. But he didn't exactly establish Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what Jiva Goswami has been doing here. He explained it. And now he's established Srimad Bhagavatam, Jiva Goswami. Now, his mode of explanation is going to follow Sridhar Swami's mode of explanation. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there he's just talking about... See, that's to do with the Mayavadis, isn't it? The Mayavadis have become popular in Madhya Pradesh and other places. I guess it's Madhya Pradesh, the middle. It means the middle. Yeah. You know, like the historical kind of fluctuations of fortunes of these different sampradayas and becoming fashionable in one place, going out of fashion somewhere else. I mean, somehow it's like that. Mayavad has become very popular in central India at the time of Jiva Goswami, apparently.